I'm Josh Braun, and this is Inside Selling, a podcast about selling without selling your soul, where I explore how you can get better at selling through the simple acts of having integrity, being radically honest, and thinking like a buyer, not a seller. Don't you wish you could get inside the mind of your prospect and know exactly what to write in a cold email that would inspire them to respond? Or what to say on a cold call that would motivate them to want to continue the conversation with you? Wish granted. Today we're going to be speaking with Tom Wallace, who ran IT over at Jellyvision. As VP of information, Tom would get tons of cold outreach from salespeople. He's going to talk about the mistakes reps made, but more importantly, what it took to break through, earn his attention, and book a meeting. We've got a lot to talk about, so let's jump in. This podcast is not going to be a bash against salespeople. Our intent here in this episode is to get Tom's perspective on some mistakes that he has seen in his 10 plus years of getting cold pitches, specifically in the IT arena, some mistakes that he's seen. And then we're going to also talk about approaches that salespeople have used to break through the noise. I read a stat somewhere that the average person in Tom's role gets about 120 messages a day between work and between cold outreach, and being able to stand out in that crowded inbox or even via phone is a very valuable skill. And Tom's got a very unique perspective on this because he's been on the receiving end of it. So Tom, if you could maybe start us off, kick us off here, what are some of the mistakes that you typically see salespeople make?
Well, let me just piggyback off of what you said. Here's a little truth. I love salespeople. I think, you know, sales gets a bad rap, but the sales is what makes the world go round. And honestly, I think, and I think especially now in this day and time of what we're kind of facing, everyone should know how to sell in some form, whether they're reselling and doing stuff on Craigslist or Facebook or however you're doing it, or you're doing it for your profession. Everyone should understand how to sell something or sell themselves, because you're going to need to at some point in time. And by doing that, hopefully, I think people will gain a little bit more respect and appreciation for it. Sales is extremely tough job to do, right? You're trying to get someone to buy into a thing and invest in something that they may not even be aware of or have even considered wanting to invest in. And so from my standpoint, it's like I've always respected and appreciated, even before I was in, you know, working in IT. Like I remember, you know, I put myself through college delivering freight. I would go to school, you know, Monday and Tuesday, full semester, you know, 12, 15 credit hours. And then the rest of the week, I would be on the road delivering freight. But what I respected with that job was the owner of the company, because he took sales to be his life. He was there for his customers. He was considerate. He was always connecting in being an open ear and listening and learning and figuring out where their pain points were in investing time to help them. For me, that's why I always like sales to me is tops. From my perspective too, it's like, you know, when people are reaching out, I don't see this as like, hey, gimme, gimme, gimme. I see it as I want to build a relationship first and foremost, right?
This is a really interesting perspective, because we're actually now having a conversation with a prospect who is not adversarial towards salespeople. So many prospects have a bad taste in their mouth from salespeople through no fault of their own, because they've experienced that sort of high pressure, slimy sales experience in their life. And so they're closed off to it. So that is not Tom. So if anyone has an opportunity or a chance, it is with Tom. So I'm curious to hear, Tom, your point here. Yeah. When you see this outreach happening, whether it's through cold email or through a cold call or maybe a voicemail, what are some of the mistakes that you see reps making?
Great question. So as much as I love sales, I also, there's sort of that, there's things that you need to do right to get that ball rolling. The way I look at it, and this may seem kind of silly, is if you were going to try and meet somebody, say like find a relationship, you know, whether what kind of partner you're having, and you know, you're looking to marry somebody or just looking to date someone casually, you're going to try and do everything you can to not scare that person, one, try and make some sort of connection with them. But also, like, if you have interest in that person, you're going to want to build that relationship. And for me, like, that's where it comes first and foremost. And I think a lot in talking to a lot of my colleagues, they share a similar interest. They might not always express it, because truthfully, in this day and age, it is imperative that you have a lasting relationship and partnership with any of your vendors or providers. It's not just about, like, what's the cheapest thing I can get. It's more about, are you going to be there when crisis happens and I need to rely on you to help me solve something, right? And so for me, the things that kind of trip up, the cold emails, it's the real estate, honestly, right? That subject line and that first sentence of the email. Truth be told, I will typically read the first sentence of every cold email I get. Most people probably don't. Most of them put them in junk, don't even think the wiser. I will at least give that first sentence a look. The only time I won't, and this is truth, another truth, is if that subject line just says RE with a colon, and I have never talked to you before, you're not replying to anything, okay? I will delete that. I was getting those, I would say probably 50 times a week. Cold, never talked to the person before. And it's this sort of trick gimmick. Don't try and do tricks on people. They don't like it. You wouldn't do that to a partner in a relationship you're having. Don't trick someone that you're trying to get a sale from. Same thing. But that real estate, you know, that subject line, it has to be catchy. It has to be interesting. Same with that first line of the email. Too often,
I want to unpack this a little bit, because you said a lot there.
Yeah.
So this idea of tricking someone into opening an email, you might get them to open the email, but once they realize that it was a trick,
right,
you've kind of shot yourself in the foot there. So let me ask you another question, Tom. So with regards to this idea of a first sentence, the other piece that I've seen as well, the reason it's so important, is that it's the first thing that you see if you're looking at the email, either through an email client or on your phone. A lot of people talk about the subject line, which is important, but right next to the subject line in that preview is also going to be the first 6 or 7 words of your first sentence.
Exactly.
And if that doesn't grab someone, they're not going to open. So Tom, talk to us a little bit about first lines. What are first lines that are turn offs? And then we'll get to the ones that are more effective. And I certainly have a point of view on this as well.
It's funny, Josh, honestly, it depends on what trend and what templates are being recycled. Like I said, as much as I love sales, what I see, it's the volume, right? Consistently, you're going to have a high volume of stuff. It's just, I can see the same template. There was one I was getting for a short period of time, and not short, I would probably say a good few months last year, of the, hey, it's only going to take you 15, 17, 14 seconds to read this whole email, parentheses, haha, no, I actually counted.
Wait a second. Wait a second. I think I wrote that. Darn it.
Here's the deal. Here's why that's actually not okay. Couple things. One, the person that you, and this is, I'm trying not to be PC police, but I'm going to dig in a little bit. Here's why it's not okay. One, that person that you are sending that to could have a cognitive impairment. Cognitive impairment could cause them to not read that quick. You might read 15 seconds. It might take them a minute or two. Second, do you really want this person only spending 15 seconds reading your email? No. You want them reading it and then following up, clicking your link, looking at your stuff, and spending more time studying what you're trying to send them. It's not 15 seconds. I get the kind of point or perspective of the approach. It's the, like, hey, you're a busy person. I'm trying to be respectful of your time. This shouldn't take too much. If you have something of value, people in my position will make the time.
I think that's a great point. And a couple other things to piggyback off on that. When you tell people that this will only take 15 seconds, what you're really saying is what I have doesn't matter.
Exactly.
If what you have to offer or your message you think can bring or make Tom happier in some way, then you should be a little bit more confident in your outreach. But I want to talk about something else you said too, Tom, with this idea of these templates. You know, if you are lifting templates off of the internet and sending them to people like Tom, it does stand to reason that other people are lifting those templates off of the internet as well. So instead of lifting templates, study the structure and the psychology behind templates, and then make them your own to a degree so that they don't feel like just another template. Because when you are another template, you are a white circle in a sea of white circle emails. And as Tom mentioned, brains ignore patterns. It's the reason why you don't pay attention to every single chair in an auditorium, just the chair you're sitting in. And so to be a red X, we don't want to be sending the same exact, you know, fill in the blank like templates. Tom, you also mentioned this idea of quantity over quality. That seems like another thing that you're picking up on is, you know, when you're mass blasting stuff, it doesn't resonate as much.
No, not at all. And just kind of taking that specific example of how long it should take you to read my email, I got that same identical template from two cold emails, two separate vendors, completely sort of separate segments within IT service, in a span of about an hour. Completely separate people, some part of the country. They're selling completely separate thing. Span of an hour, completely identical. And I read the emails and I'm like, it was verbatim. And it's kind of astounding for me.
I get it too. If you're a salesperson and you're using tools like Outreach or SalesLoft that gives you the ability to be able to crank these things out very quickly, it's easy. You know, it's easy to send this stuff, but it sounds like slow down a little bit. Instead of shifting into fifth gear and doing a lot, be a little more thoughtful. Take, 25 or 30 people and shift down into first gear a little bit, slow down a little bit.
Yep. I would say another sort of faux pas is don't make a promise that you can't keep. Too often I have seen someone who I don't know send me a cold email and right off the top try and make a blanket guarantee of something. I'm a big fan of the movie Tommy Boy. I think we all are. And there's a classic line in there, like, I could put a guarantee on the box of something, but what's in there isn't going to be guaranteed. I won't say it because it's explicit, but I think you get the point. For me, it's absolutely true. And that's the thing. It's like, don't promise something. Like, I don't know you. You don't know me. Let's explore this if it's something that may be of interest. But here's the other truth too, and I will spell this, is that if you're thinking that buyers don't do the research and are not seeking stuff out, it's untrue. The highest percentage of stuff that I've actually invested in is because I or my team has been doled out with trying to find a solution for a thing, and then we've gone and sought after it. The stuff that we've actually purchased is because we're doing that research. And when these vendors are contacting, honestly, like I talking to IT specifically, it's only so big, right? And depending on the segment, if we're talking telecommunications and video conferencing, there's a handful of vendors, the kind of the cream of the crop. Chances are, if you're reaching out to somebody, a prospect, they've already looked at and have a good sense of what you are. So it's like, they're doing the research. People on my end are doing that research. So it's like, don't expect that they don't know who you are.
So a couple of things I want to unpack here. This first one is, I call it being too hypey in an email. You know, saying you can 10x someone's conversion rates, or saying that you can grow their pipeline by 5x. These kind of hypey phrases, to Tom's point, destroy your credibility because people can smell your commission breath.
Yep.
You know, of course you're going to say that. You're a salesperson. And so I actually just wrote a post about this, just substituting words. Instead of saying, you know, we can do this, you know, you can say something like, you know, might you be open to learning about this? You know, that small shift in language takes the pressure off and the assumptive. One is, let me tell you how to sell you, and I'm going to try to persuade you to buy, even though I don't know you. And the other one is, I'm going to put you in control to decide if this is something that you're open to learning about. So that's a really critical point, is if you are promising the world in your cold emails, it's almost synonymous, to use Tom's reference earlier in the podcast, of meeting someone on the first date and saying, can I meet your parents? It's
right.
Like, slow down, big boy. Like, slow down, cowboy.
Right.
Now, Tom, I do want to challenge you on one point that you said, which is—
I love it. Challenge me.
You know, we are kind of IT people. We are on the lookout. We kind of know what's going on when you reach out.
Yeah.
Let me tell you a quick story, Tom, because something I teach reps and would love to get your take on it.
Great.
I was in the mall several years ago with my wife, literally just trying to kill some time. I didn't need anything. I walked into this store called Fit to Run for no reason at all, just to kill some time. And if the store associate said to me, "What brings you in today?" I would have said nothing. If she said, "Can I help you with anything?" I would have said no. But this store associate, her name was Liz, she didn't say any of those things. Instead, she looked down at my sneakers. She goes, "Oh, are you a runner?" I said, "Yes." She said, "How long a distance?" I said, "Marathons." And then she said, "Have you ever had a running gait test?" And I said, "What's that?" And a moment later, I'm literally on a treadmill in the store, and she's recording my gait. And she shows me the video.
Hold on, where's your wife? Is she catch you doing this?
My wife is shopping somewhere in some store. She shows me the video, and she shows me that my feet are pronated in. And the next question was brilliant. I call it an illumination question. She said, "Are you aware that if you run in sneakers that are not made for pronated feet, you can get injured on long distance runs? And if you'd like, we could take a look at your sneakers to see if they're made for pronated feet." And 2 minutes later, I'm spending $180 on a pair of sneakers. So this idea, a secret skill that I teach salespeople, is not so much asking about problems,
right, but
shining a light on problems you might not know about or missed opportunities. Like, I'm always going to be in the market for bike tires that are more puncture resistant. They don't get punctured as much on the road, or that they're faster. So yep. I guess my question to you, Tom, on that case is, what if a sales rep were to ask some type of an illumination question? You know, are you aware? Did you know? I don't know what that might look like with regards to what you sell, because I'm not in IT, but is it possible that a salesperson can bring something to your attention that perhaps you didn't know about? Maybe a problem, or maybe a missed opportunity?
Yes, absolutely yes. So I actually, funny two things. One, I do know this story, because I actually do follow you, Josh. So I'm aware. So I was teasing him, like, "Where's your wife?" While you're on a treadmill, and now just spent a bunch on shoes. But two is, like, I actually have used this in practice for my teams internally and externally. I think you kind of use this term too, as like a disruptive question.
Get
people thinking about stuff in a certain way that puts them on that reactionary of like, "Oh, I need to consider it." I have capitalized on that for when I've had to get buy-in from executives. Same sort of strategy, because it's a thing of like, you need to enlighten them and get them to look at things differently. Absolutely. And that's one of those things where it's helped me in terms of cold emails, is when I get sort of that kind of question right off the bat, and not in a way that's sort of like promising and guaranteed, but rather like, "Hey, I understand you're in this space. Have you ever considered this? Have you thought about this? Have you thought about this may challenge you?" Because that gets me thinking right away.
I love that. I actually had a similar experience. I love to detail my car, and I get this email in my inbox from this company called Adams Car Wash Supplies. And I opened it up, and there was a line in the email that said something like, "How do you know that your wash mitt isn't leaving fine scratches on your car?" And I was like, "What?" and it turns out that if you use a bucket to wash your car with, which I do, that the dirt from the sponge can be left on the sponge, because you're basically putting dirt in the water.
Yeah.
And that could get on your paint. And so Adams Car Wash enlightened me on this new type of car wash bucket that essentially has what they call a grit guard on the bottom of it. Almost like a cheese grater, where you rub the sponge on it,
and it
loosens the dirt and makes it settle to the bottom of the bucket, so you have a scratch-free car. And I bought the bucket immediately. I wasn't searching for a bucket. I didn't have a problem. But to your point, Tom, I was enlightened. So this is a secret skill, if you're selling to people like Tom or anybody, is to be able to ask a simple question in your email, like these illumination questions, that can get Tom to start thinking differently about how he's getting the job done today, or a missed opportunity that could potentially make him happier.
Absolutely. And I think it's, to me, like I said, I practice that and have practiced it in professional, but in also in personal settings. Like, that is a way, if you need to engage people and start a relationship and start a conversation, or if you need to try and get a decision moved forward, you need to be able to sort of elicit that, get people thinking the right mindset. Just saying, I have this thing, it's valuable, here's how much, it's easy for you, da 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 da. Like, that's not going to do it in this day and age. Okay.
I got it. So, Tom, I want to put you on the spot here.
Yes.
I don't know. There's a lot of people that are listening to this that do have, you know, some IT acumen. So for someone like you, based on your role at Jellyvision, based on what you were doing and the job you were getting done, what might a question like that be? How would someone formulate that? You know, again, the way I structure them is, you know, are you aware? Did you know? What are you doing to ensure? You know, how might you phrase that question in a way that might get you to sort of scratch your head and say, I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's sort of all of those lead-ins. The technology is ever changing. I mean, that's the thing. Like, moving, and the biggest thing, honestly, right now, if we're just taking what's going on in our world with this pandemic and people having to work from home, it's moved to the cloud. There's a big buzz term in IT called digital transformation. It kind of gets misused at times, but essentially what it boils down to is you're taking all of that legacy lift, your softwares, your on-premises solutions and servers, and you're now modernizing your workforce by moving all of that up in the cloud and better enabling a more mobile workforce. People say remote, but it's really mobile if we think about it. You don't want people kind of tied into it, just another hub. You want them to be able to be secure wherever they are. And so for me, I think that really is kind of one of those buzz areas of, like, if it's anything approaching how to solve for that and teeing it up, like, have you considered how you can do this more efficiently, you know, moving blank to the cloud? Like, I'm going to be looking at it. But really, it's finding those keys of the proper words and how to structure that matter.
You make a good point, because I want to unpack this a little bit, because every time you reach out to someone like Tom, Tom is already getting this job done today the best way he knows how. But all prospects are always open to better. Like, there's always going to be a way for Tom to level up and to look even better in front of his boss. So Tom, with respects to this particular area, what might other people like you might not know? So they're getting this job done today the best way they know how, but what might they not know?
You mean other CIOs and VPs?
Yes.
Great. Yes. Question. I think, honestly, it comes down to having a capable team and enabling them for success. The truth is like, I can only seek out so much in my day trying to oversee information security and IT in enabling a workforce and working with like, there's only so much, right? And connecting and kind of keeping all of the executive leadership appeased and keeping them happy and finding their problems. It comes from enabling your people. You need to allow them to grow and take risks, but also to learn and seek out. And so one of the things that we were doing was enabling those system admins and the architects to go, I pose a problem. Here's a thing I think we need to focus on. Here's some of our risks. Here's a cost consideration. Go help me solve this. And they'll go off and look at it, connect with the vendors, and do that. So getting your teams to do it, delegate effectively, is going to enable you to do this more rapidly. When you start to silo information and knowledge, that's where you start to pose critical risk to the business. And we've seen that. And much like we're seeing companies now that are struggling to sort of adapt to a remote workforce, it's the same thing in IT. And it happens time and time again. You have a system engineer or an admin who knows everything, is the expert about a thing. Well, guess what? He gets pulled away because Google or Amazon or somewhere else gives him, he throws him a bunch of money. And now suddenly you're out all of that knowledge. And you have infrastructure that has to support, you know, your workforce, 500, 2,000, 15,000 people plus. And now what do you do? So
the question might be something like, you know, and, you know, help me finish this sentence. You know, what are you doing to enable your team to?
What are you doing to enable your team to have the best success at finding the best solution for what you need at that moment? Because truth is, and here's another thing, One of the people, a great friend and an architect who works in IT, he'll build something with a new solution. And the moment that's done, do you think he takes a break? No. He's already looking at how he can make that better. So he's constantly reading and seeking out, hey, there's a new, I heard there's a new feature for this set over at this, you know, SaaS solution. Let me go check it out. I'm going to do a demo with them. We'll find out. Guess what? I can save more money over here and it's going to be more cost effective. Like, he's always on the go of trying to figure out what's the best way to make stuff better. And that's the thing, is you cannot rest ever.
This is a really good point, that because in sales, we always talk about solving problems. But the flip side of that is people are wired for self-betterment.
Yep.
I am always going to want to go faster, longer when I run, when I bike, and when I swim, and your prospects are no different. And talking about missed opportunities or ways to do things better is also just feels better on your outreach too. Oftentimes I see outreach that's so negative talking about problems. I mean, people don't want to hear about problems, but they are more open to hearing about aspirations, about what's possible. The advantage a salesperson has over someone like Tom is that a salesperson is working with lots of different organizations. So someone like Tom is going to be open to an illumination question to hear what his peers are doing that he might, remember, I'm using the word might, might not know about. So I love that, Tom.
I would just add to that too. It's like the connections I get, you know, networking and going out to events and conferences and being part of groups with other peers. It's the same thing. It's like you're sharing stories and it's, hey, what are you doing? Who are you using? You know, how have you gotten through this sort of challenge? Because the truth is, like, these challenges, they're systemic and they're global, right? The past couple of years, it's been compliance. You had GDPR get instated in Europe. And so that's this whole thing of, like, how do we be compliant for anyone that's got to do business in Europe and how data gets handled? And then it was CCPA last year coming on with California, which now started in January. Well, now the big thing is, like, oh boy, what do we do? Everyone can't be in the office. How do we even, you know, have a business continuity program and a pandemic plan that, like, we can just sustain the business and keep it running? And I think once companies actually try to go back to normal, like people can go back in their offices, there's going to be sort of that critical pressure on, especially individuals in my position, of saying, hey, you need to cut costs. Hey, what we're seeing is we actually found out more effective ways possibly of having a remote workforce, whereas before we were not inclined to allow it. They're going to be further pressure on that of, you need to reduce cost. You need to better enable people to work mobile, not just remote, but mobile, and try to do stuff more effectively with less.
I love it. I love it. So what we've learned so far is what not to do, you know, not promising the world, not being too hypey. Effective first sentences from Tom's take literally are asking a question that is shining a light on a problem or opportunity that Tom might not be aware of. And here's the thing with these illumination questions that I want to caution you against. They can't be obvious. You can't say, did you know that if you eat a lot of fried chicken and don't exercise, you're going to gain weight.
Right.
They also can't feel like they're leading somebody. You know, they can't be, questions that are leading. They have to be unbiased. So there might be a little bit of a skill in writing these questions that are coming across as, you know, unbiased and just making, again, someone kind of think about their current solution. Tom, I want to talk about something else, what salespeople call the call to action, which is typically, hey, Tom, can we meet for 35 minutes? I would imagine you kind of get a lot of those. What's your take on that?
If I don't know you and we haven't sort of built that preliminary interest, no. I mean, honestly, because I think most people understand time is precious. There's so much we can offer. Getting on a phone call, there has to be sort of that give and take, right? If we're building a relationship, it's the same thing. I'm happy to get on a phone or look at a demo or discuss stuff if there's sort of that interest and I see it. I kind of used to have this sort of diagram that I had of, like, there's sort of these three circles. One is, like, I have a need. Second is, you have a solution. The third is, I see you as a partner. And for me, it's, I need to see you as a partner is sort of that overlap of, that has to be first and foremost. Again, this is just me speaking my own opinion for how I run stuff, but truthfully, like, I know a lot of peers feel the same way. It's not just like, who's the cheapest? Cool. Because you may take the cheapest, it might not serve you in a year or two from now. And so then you're stuck having to rethink it.
Yeah. So we're talking a little bit about a couple of things, and I want to make sure we treat them separately. Top of the funnel, you know, just starting to get that initial conversation going. And then obviously bottom of the funnel, which is what Tom's talking about now with becoming a partner. If we kind of stay to the top of the funnel for a second, Tom said something very, very, very interesting. And please take note of this because I think it's crucial, is that if you're asking for someone's time and they don't know you, which is the majority of cold outreach, the majority of cold outreach ends with a call to action, asking for a meeting for 30 minutes. What Tom is proposing, and something that I preach as well, which is see if there's interest first. So what does that look like with regards to a call to action? Well, here's some phraseology that you can use. You could say, not sure if it's a fit, but are you open to learning more? Or you could have no call to action at all, because if Tom's interested, he knows how to respond to a cold email. Like if you ask one of these illumination questions and perhaps you say, illumination question, not sure if it's a fit, but some other IT directors have been achieving X. Either way, Tom, have a great time in Chicago. That's a perfectly okay way to end an email. And if Tom's interested, he might write back and say, well, what do you mean? Or you could say, open to learning more, or does this sound interesting? Yeah. Or awaiting your fair but stern reply. You know, my friend John Bouchon, love that guy. He's a copywriter. Another one, awaiting your profanity-filled response. And this assumes that you're not asking for a meeting, but you're just seeing if the prospect is open to starting a conversation. And once you've started a conversation, then you could see if Tom, people like Tom, are open to moving that conversation from email to a phone call. But going right for the phone call, again, is synonymous, to use Tom's analogy again, of walking into a bar, locking eyes with someone, saying, "Do you want to come home?"
It's just not appropriate, kind of creepy
It's a little too fast. Again, you're shifting into fifth gear. Stay in first gear for a little bit. Go slower in the beginning. So I love that tip. I love that tip, Tom.
Hey, Josh, real quick. And I want to add, so there's something I know that you sort of coach your sales folks on, and that's about adding value, right? Offering things up, right? Hey, there's no strings attached. Here's something of maybe of interest that you want to look at. Absolutely agree with that, right? It doesn't have to be pressury. If you have a thing like, hey, by example, some of the things I laid out, you know, the IT, whole IT segment we're going through with GDPR and CCPA, and now we're dealing with digital transformation and going remote and mobile workforce. If you offer something up, some analysis, a white paper, I'm probably going to look at it, right? If it's something of value that you can provide right off the bat, I'm going to look at it. If it is literally like, hey, just check out our website. No, like, but if it's something specific, you're asking that, you know, disruptive question, you're asking that question to get me thinking, but then you also have something to provide. Yeah. You're already piquing my interest. I'm going to want to check that out.
Yeah, so this gets back to, you know, most of the time when you reach out to people, they're not actively looking, but they're always actively learning. So what kind of deposits can you make? And so some examples of ones that I've used, you've heard some ones from Tom, but I've done some things like, hey, John, you know, here's a slideshow of how to write an effective cold email. Here's a seminar that's 15 minutes long that will show you how to diffuse the most common objections that you could share with your team. These types of deposits that you get from people have an opportunity to make people feel good because you're teaching them something new. You know, chefs do this all the time as well. You guys may have heard me talk about this. They'll cook for you on TV and they'll show you these great recipes. And when you're a great teacher and when you share these recipes with people, when you're in the store and you see the cookware from that chef, you're more likely to check it out. So what this is not is sending like case studies, because a case study assumes like it's a salesy thing. So it has to be, it can't be a product brochure,
right?
But if it is information and it's done not only in a way that teaches Tom something that he did not know, that's critical. And you do it in a way that's actually entertaining and clear. Yep. You're going to elevate yourself. So this is where people struggle with this, is you can't just send anything. It has to be informative. It has to be fresh, a fresh take, a fresh perspective. And the icing on the cake is it has to be presented in a way that's actually somewhat entertaining and clear.
Yes, absolutely. And I would say this, like where it's been effective with me and some of the other folks I've talked to, the landscape is ever changing, right? It's data privacy one minute, it's digital transformation the next. If you can create some sort of primer, some sort of like, here's some quick tips on how to get a handle and start asking the right questions in your company about, are you doing this for digital transformation? Are you doing this for data privacy? Are you doing this for whatever? That's the kind of thing that will definitely pique my interest in others. Because it's, again, it's not a case study. It's like, well, read what everyone else is saying. No, it's the like, here's some tips that may be valuable. Here's some questions you should be considering. I got a lot of that from lenders around data privacy in California with the CCPA that was passed. And one of them did pique your interest, one of the vendors. And it's like, yeah, you did the right thing. And we actually went off and sought them out. And it turned out that we were able to do some business with them. So it's doing it right in sort of making that deposit, as you say, is extremely valuable.
Yeah, and you guys can do this in a cold call as well, right? So a lot of the times you cold call and you try to set up a demo. But if you shift into this mode that Tom's talking about, you know, your cold call could sound something like this, you know, hey, Tom, you know, reason that I'm calling is that we're hosting some, you know, personalized workshops for IT directors on the ever-changing landscape and trends in X. And I was just calling to see if I could ask you a couple questions to see if this would be of interest. Does that sound fair? That is a sort of an educational-based offer that Tom might lean into because you're not actually selling a product. You're actually educating him on something that he cares about. It's the reason why you're listening to this podcast. You know, another example of this is a few months ago, I did this Flip the Script tour with Chorus. We went all these different cities and gave away free bread to the masses, free educational sessions on prospecting. It was a couple hundred salespeople in every single session. And one of the first questions I asked people was, raise your hand if you would be here if this was a Chorus demo. And of course, not one hand went up. And then I said, raise your hand if you think your prospects are different than you. And so this idea, especially at the beginning of a relationship, to ask these illumination questions and to actually teach, and you think of your prospects as students, is going to allow you to start way more conversations with people. So I love that insight, Tom.
Yeah, it's funny. Some of the people I consider most dear in the sales world are not necessarily vendors of mine. It may be people that I've tried to do business with and it just has not aligned, but it really comes from like, can I, you know, respect and trust you and just, can we be people, right? It's be relatable, right? I'm not a salesperson, Josh, but I know how to like talk to people and like build relationships and like, you know, in network. And it's like, everyone is human. We have to find a commonality, find a similar interest, start talking. You know, small talk matters, right? It can go to a point, but not too far. And I think one of the things you had asked, like what it's, or kind of teed this up, like what has been successful for me with cold emails? Is when it's personal, right? Someone has taken the time to learn who I am, what I may be facing, and not just done it like the cold blanket of like, well, you're an IT director, so you must have this. No, it's like, oh, hey, Tom Wallace, you're at this company. I know who you are. I've read you up on LinkedIn, or I looked at your bio on the company website. Let me post a couple things. And honestly, one of the ones that was effective, we didn't do business, but like that cold email got me to respond right away and set up a call with someone that looked at my bio on the company website, and our bios are kind of quirky. And she made a couple jokes about it, but she was the only person out of hundreds, thousands of colds that came in that actually took that effort to look up who I was as an individual. It's the same thing. Like if not to go back to the dating analogy, but like, you go in a bar, you might not know somebody, but like you're going to try to find and observe every potential thing you can. You look at LinkedIn, it's not just looking at like, well, what company were they at for how long or what school they go to? Finding identifiers, finding things that are relatable, right? Do your research, talk to other people. Do you know this company? Do you have a connection in? Do you know anything about this person? As much, I call it intelligence work. It's not homework, right? A teacher's not assigning you stuff to go home and do, you know, outside of the school day. It's intelligence work. It might not be the CIA, you know, but it's still, it's intelligence. You're learning as much as you can about an individual because you need to make a connection relationship. And you're going to use that in a way that's going to foster something worthwhile.
Now talk about a great first sentence, right? So instead of blasting, you take the time, literally spend 4 or 5 minutes looking at someone's LinkedIn. How are they describing themselves? Have they written any articles? Have they liked any posts? Do they have any interesting quirky bios? And can you take that information that you find and actually craft that into a first sentence? So I've received a couple of these. You know, this is what it sounds like. Hey, Josh, you know, noticed on your LinkedIn that you run a podcast called Inside Selling. So I went over there and I inhaled all the episodes. I really liked that episode with Jackie Lipnicki, where she taught how to use LinkedIn to create warmer cold calls. Like that first sentence of that email, assuming that you have something to do with a podcast service, maybe that helps me edit podcasts faster because I can't stand editing podcasts. It's going to get me, it's going to get my attention. Where people make a mistake on this sometimes is, hey, Josh, noticed you went to Florida State. By the way, I sell email marketing software. So when you're actually referencing something, see if you can't tie it into how you can potentially help or your illumination question. Also, if you're listening to this, check out, Of course you're listening to it. Check out Beck Holland over there at Chorus. She does a series called Flip the Script, and she does a lot of stuff on how to glean things from people's LinkedIn profiles and use those as a first sentence. If you're not doing that, do that. I'd rather have you send fewer emails, 25, 30 a day, that are a little bit more thoughtful. And remember, it's not about more. It's about higher response rates. You're just going to get more conversation started. And I also think it's going to feel better on your soul.
Yep. Could not agree with you more, Josh. For me, it's all about can you, you know, you can do high volume and kind of do the predicting of like, you can get a fraction back. But if you do targeted, just take that time and focus in and try and learn. Cause honestly, on my end, like I want you to sell to me. Okay. I want you to be successful at this because you're going to make my job easier. You're going to hopefully save me money. You're going to be cost effective in that approach, but you're going to give me a lasting solution that I'm going to, you know, find a way of investing in making our company better at what we do. But that all comes from providing value back, piquing interest, but building those necessary sort of building blocks and cornerstones first, right? Don't just jump into it. And it's imperative, like the more you know. One of the things that I teach very similar in my teams was know your audience's motivations. Sometimes it's hard. I mean, obviously it's hard from a cold perspective, right? You don't know the person straight up. You can do all your intelligence work, but ultimately you don't know that person and their personality, right? But when you're sort of in an environment where you are working with people and you have a little bit more knowledge and you've had those connections, or even if they're loose or not directly connected, you're going to learn as much as you can, right? Because honestly, the more you know about how someone is motivated, you're going to have a better instinct of like, this is how I should probably approach this at this point in time, right?
Well, it's a great tip. And if you're selling to IT people like Tom and you're not in IT, how do you do that? Well, Tom mentioned a really great tip earlier, which is he listens to CIO podcasts and perhaps he attends CIO type webinars. You should be doing that too.
Yes.
And understanding a little bit of the lingo and trends, you don't have to be, you know, deep, deep, deep knowledge, but you should be able to speak the lingo. And one way to get to know the audience a little bit better is to listen to some of those, you know, educational materials that Tom is listening to. So it's just a tip if you're an SDR selling out of your domain.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the thing. I've actually seen a good difference between folks that have taken that time to learn about their segment and what they're doing and kind of all of the ins and outs. And it's not so much like you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to be an SME in a thing. You do to a certain aspect, but what is more vital is that you understand sort of the pains people are going through. You understand sort of like what is the mood right now with people. Right now, it's off the charts with kind of like, there's volatility in all the markets. There's certain things, people are getting laid off. We're figuring out, like I said, digital transformation's happening and people are having to figure out how do you handle a mobile and dispersed workforce. There's a lot to juggle, right? Time sensitivity, obviously, like everything is changed right now. You do the best you can, but it's also like, it's taking that time. Like you said, you hone in on, I'm going to focus on this person know as much as I can and target it, because you're going to have better success, especially at this point in time.
Tom Wallace, you have said it all, my friend. So much pure gold you have dropped. If people, now listen, if you're listening to this podcast, which you are because you're listening to it, if you want to get a hold of Tom, he's not at Jellyvision anymore, but you can connect with him. Tom, how do people find you on LinkedIn?
You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm connected with Josh. Just look me up. Name is Tom Wallace. And I'm here. I do kind of consult and coach. I'm not an expert. I am not accredited anywhere. I don't have a PhD. But I do consult and talk with salespeople from time to time. I will tell you like it is. I am completely open to questions. If you even want to send something past me just to look at it, I will be unfiltered, honest, and direct. Because honestly, that's the way I think we need to handle each other and communicate and do business.
Okay, so if you are a salesperson selling into IT and you're not sure about the audience, because how could you be? You're not in IT. Tom Wallace can give you the inside track and you can set up some time with Tom and he can tell you a little bit about the challenges and aspirations of the people that you're selling to. You could even pull up the person's profile on LinkedIn and ask Tom about what this person's job is day to day. And he could learn a little bit about what you're selling and he could perhaps help you with your outreach. How valuable would that be? All you have to do is reach out to Tom Wallace on LinkedIn and introduce yourself, but please don't do it in a mass blast way. Find something about him.
Use the things I've told you today and we'll see how it goes.
Tom, thank you so much for being so generous with your time.
Absolutely. Thanks, Josh. It was great to talk to you again.